Bring us back up to strength.
Artyom gave him a quizzical look.
And he agreed to that? He cursed them, remember? Back there when we... in the bunker. They promised to help us, and they shafted us. If they'd shown up then, if they'd given us men, maybe we wouldn't have had to be brought back up to strength. All those boys of ours. To be blunt.
To be blunt, said Letyaga. They didn't give us any men then.
But they did afterwards. They gave them when they could. And they threw in all sorts of equipment and ammunition, too. You know yourself how much money Hansa has. They made the offer themselves. Well, and the old man was in deep mourning, drinking to the list of our men. But there was nothing he could do. There was nowhere he could get another 50 men. Then he consulted the guys. They all understood, so they started recruiting on the quiet, with tests that only stands to reason, and interviews. They sifted the riffraff out straight away, and in the end it turned out okay. Hansa Special Forces, mostly, so everything's peaceful and quiet with them. It's not like we're on our own and they're on their own. We're all together.
Uh-huh, said Artyom, clearing his throat and nodding at the two men hanging back.
All in the same boat, Letyaga insisted.
I don't believe it, Artyom said after a pause.
What?
I don't believe that simply to exonerate itself, Hansa would allocate us 50 fighting men and throw in equipment on top of that. They don't do anything for nothing.
But it isn't for nothing. The old man signed on to train their special forces because...
Letyaga clicked his tongue.
They're not really all that special. Especially when it come to the surface. They're as helpless as kittens up on top. Children of the catacombs. Fuck it.
The last light bulb was left dangling somewhere far behind, and Letyaga took a torch that looked like a club out of his knapsack. The two men behind moved up closer and clattered their automatics. It was a short tunnel, well known to everyone, but still not much fun to walk. Better to stick close together. The torch immediately lanced into the darkness in the tunnel, filling it with milk and then stirring it up.
The catacombs...
But you're the same age as me, Artyom recalled. So you were 4-2, right? When the final war...
Oh, no, kid, said Letyaga. I'm a year older than you. We already figured that out, so I was 5.
Artyom tried to picture his own Moscow. But those pot-bellied dragonfly planes soared into his head again, and the little carriage cars drove in trembling, and a fine, warm rain started falling. He shook his head to fling out this... tenacious nonsense, this fantastical vision.
And what do you remember? Your parents, your flat?
I remember the television. I remember them showing the president on the television. We had a great big one. And the president said, "We have no other choice. They forced us into it. They've driven us into a corner. They shouldn't have driven us into a corner, so I have decided..." And then my mother came in from the kitchen carrying a bowl of chicken soup for me. Noodle soup it was. She said to me, "Why are you watching all this terrible stuff? Come on, I'll put the cartoons on for you." And I told her, "I don't want any noodles." I remember that very moment. The very beginning. Or the end. After there weren't any more cartoons. Or more noodles. And do you remember your parents?
I do. But it would be better if I didn't.
"Listen, Letyaga,"
loose-limbed Yuretz interrupted.
"It was them who hit us first. We didn't hit them, they hit us. Without warning. And we intercepted the first salvo before we fired. I'm telling you, I was 7. And I'm telling you, noodles. Noodles. Stood in the corner and forced to eat it. I thought at the time, there's the president, and he gets put in the corner too."
"What difference does it make now?" Artyom asked. "Whether it was us or them."
"There is a difference," Nigmatulin objected. "We wouldn't have started it. Our people are sane and responsible. We were always for peace. Those bastards blocked us in. They dragged us into the nuclear arms race so they could run us into the ground. They wanted to break up the country, carve it into pieces, for the oil and the gas, because our state was like a thorn in their side. They didn't want any independent countries at all. Everyone just laid down and spread their legs for them. We were the only ones who snarled back at them, and those lousy bastards, those assholes, pushed us.
They just didn't expect us to go all the way. They thought we'd piss ourselves, but we... They wanted to break us up. That was it. No surrendering to the enemy. Fuck them and their oil grabbing. They wanted to colonize us. But they ended up shitting themselves, the dickheads, when their TV showed them what was flying their way. That's what you get for playing the tough guy with us. And we're still not croaking, even underground.
How old were you then? Artyom asked.
What business is that of yours? I was one, the old guys told me. So what?
So nothing, Artyom replied.
So nothing on that side of the ocean. So nothing on this side either.
Letyaga cleared his throat to smooth things over. They didn't talk any more after that.
Halt! Extinguish the torch!
Nigmatulin and Yurets parted and pressed up against the walls, with their automatics half-raised. Artyom stayed in the center of the tunnel with Letyaga. A button clicked obediently, and the light fizzled out. Night fell.
The border's closed. Turn round and go back.
We're from the Order,
Letyaga shouted into the echoing well.
With a message for your leadership.
Turn round and go back,
a voice repeated out of the well.
I told you, we have a letter from the Führer, in person, from Colonel Miller.
The red spots of laser sights leapt out of the darkness, darted about, and then jumped onto Letyaga's forehead and Artyom's chest.
Get back! We have orders to shoot to kill.
So that's all their fucking diplomacy for you, Letyaga summed up.
They won't let us in,
Yurets whispered.
There was no order to obtain entry by force, Nigmatulin responded. But we were told to deliver the envelope,
Letyaga objected.
Otherwise the old man will rip my head off. I don't know what's in there, but he said if it's not delivered, everything's down the tubes.
There was a sweet, putrid smell of musty urine. Apparently no conveniences were provided at the guard post, and when the sentries had to pee, they simply walked down the dark tunnel into no man's land. Artyom looked at the ruby-red spot marking the position of his heart. He thought about Miller, and about his own final mission that was still uncompleted. To go home to Anya and tell her that he was leaving her. Tell her to her face, and not go running off secretly, with his tail between his legs for the sake of great causes. He had already stirred up more than enough trouble for the sake of great causes. He had left Olajek to that doctor after doing everything that he could. Just dumped the body with its leaky holes, dusted off his hands and gone off to drink vodka. He had let Leocha walk down the steps into nowhere, whistling, and decided not to interfere or try to bring him back. Some went left, some right, to each his own. He hadn't driven the condemned prisoners out into freedom with Svinolup's Nagant pistol. He hadn't asked about the woman's slippers in the major's office, and he hadn't jerked the curtain aside. He hadn't done anything. He hadn't tried to see if there was anyone there or not, and since he hadn't seen, that meant there wasn't anybody. That was what he could tell himself, and he could live very calmly with that. And he'd be able to make up some explanation about Homer too, about that worthless old man and illiterate scribbler. Everyone just lied about the pangs of conscience. A man was strong, and he could cope with anything. And great affairs excused everything. He tried to cover the trembling spot of light with his palm, and it jumped up onto his hand.
Final warning!
A voice shouted out of the well of darkness.
Do we pull back then?
Letyaga asked himself.
Leave the old man. Leave all your corpses. Clear off into this dark well and put the lid on it. You have a more important mission, Artyom. To save the world. You mustn't waste your time on mushrooms.
Find Dietmar!
Artyom shouted into those dark depths, and his voice turned squeaky.
Who?
Dietmar! Tell him the stalkers come back.
What's all this about?
Letyaga turned towards Artyom.
What kind of story is this? It's all the same story. About the old man with a beard.
Artyom tried to smile.
And about a certain idiot. My secret assignment.
And at that moment, in their little flea pit of a universe, a supernova lit up. Dietmar came out to the first machine gun nest of the first checkpoint. He probably looked at the bold, decorated warriors hiding behind their hands and laughed to himself. But he didn't turn off the searchlight.
Who called me?
I did. Artyom.
Artyom?
Dietmar seemed to have forgotten him.
What Artyom?
I knew it, Nigmatulin huffed.
The Stalker, with a dispatch for the Führer. Personal delivery from Miller. From the head of the Order, concerning the situation.
Concerning what situation?
Dietmar didn't want to understand him.
At Teatralnaya. Concerning your invasion.
Our invasion? From Miller?
Dietmar sounded surprised.
There isn't any invasion. There is unrest at Teatralnaya. We have refugees flooding in. The Führer has ordered the establishment of a peacekeeping mission at the station in order to prevent casualties. But it's after 3 in the morning now. He's sleeping, and he's not expecting any letters from Mr. Miller. But if you wish, you can let me have the dispatch. In the morning, I'll hand it on to him at his secretariat.
Out of the question,
Letyaga prompted in a whisper.
Instructions are to hand the document to him in person or destroy it.
Out of the question,
Artyom repeated in a shout.
To be handed only to the Führer in person.
A great pity,
Dietmar sighed.
The Führer is not receiving anyone, especially professional cutthroats. Before being handed to him, the envelope will in any case be opened and examined to avoid any attempt at poisoning. I am in possession of information,
Artyom said, bracing himself,
that the events at Teatralnaya are not public unrest, but deliberately planned subversion, designed to take over the station.
But we are in possession of different information concerning Teatralnaya,
Dietmar responded indifferently.
And not everyone likes it, Mr. Stalker, including your comrades, for example. Goodbye.
He saluted them, swung round, and started striding towards the station.
Wait!
Letyaga shouted.
Stop! This envelope isn't from Miller!
Dietmar couldn't care less. The machine gunner stirred the long sting of his barrel, pointing out the pathway for the lead bullets. The snipers released their spots free, and these spots even pierced through the floodlight's white light that was as bright as the first second of death.
Do you hear me?
Letyaga roared.
The envelope isn't from Miller. It's from Bersolov.
The black figure that had almost dissolved into the whiteness froze.
Repeat that.
From Bersolov to the Führer, in person, urgent.
Artyom turned towards Letyaga. There was something going on here that he couldn't understand. Nigmatulin and Yurets were anxiously mulling over the unfamiliar name. Dietmar didn't say anything, but he was glued to the spot.
Very well. One man will be allowed into the station. The others can wait.
Letyaga jerked his massively broad shoulders, accepting the condition. He stepped forward.
Not you!
Dietmar stopped him.
Give the dispatch to that boy, Artyom.
I have my orders.
And I have my orders. He's the only one I'll let through, and only after he has been searched.
Why him? Artyom, what the hell?
Give me the envelope,
Artyom told him.
Come on, Letyaga, you saw through me. A secret mission. This is what Miller sent me for, in case they wouldn't let you. I have my own story mixed up in this. You're not allowed to know. How do you think I found out about Teatralnaya?
Everyone here has his own story. Fuck it,
Letyaga growled.
They all hide them from each other, the old paranoid. Don't give it to him. Are you crazy?
Nigmatulin hissed.
Who is he anyway? The colonel said you should do it, or we...
Shut your gob, Ruslanchik,
Letyaga told him.
This is Artyom, all right? He's one of us. Our man. Got that?
As you wish, said Dietmar, turning cool. I don't have any more time for this. I ought to be at Teatralnaya already, handing out humanitarian aid to the population.
Letyaga cursed him, spat in annoyance, and pulled a small, brown, thick, opaque envelope out of the pocket over his heart. He handed it to Artyom.
This is our man. Is that clear?
He yelled to the machine gun, the sniper's rifles, the spot of laser light, the black stencils, the piss-soaked universe, and the blinding star.
We'll be waiting here for him.
By all means, Dietmar responded. But the Führer can sleep until midday. Wait.
We'll be waiting. We'll be here, Artyom,
Letyaga whispered passionately.
You'll come back, if they harm even a hair on your head. The old man growls at you, of course, but he'll move mountains for his own men. We be one blood, thou and I.
Right, said Artyom. He wasn't hearing much at this stage.
Right, Letyaga, thanks. I don't know.
And he glued that damned envelope to his skin, went stumbling over the sleepers, and flew towards the supernova straight into it, into a billion degrees Celsius.
Enemies of the Reich, enemies of mankind, a horde of freaks stands at the gates.
There was only one speaker, but he was broadcasting from a dozen loudspeakers lagging slightly behind each other, and so he repeated his words as his own echo, and this chorus of one man's voice sounded like the voice of a hydra, eerie and mesmerizing. That voice was oozing with venom.
If we do not fight to the last, we are threatened with total annihilation.
The voice reached Artyom before the light of Chekhov-Wagner Station. The light couldn't bounce off the curved, twisting walls of the tunnel, but the voice could.
Having learned of the treacherous plans of the Red Line to violate the peace accord, to seize Teatralnaya Station, I have decided to strike a preemptive blow.
The Führer? But you said he was sleeping,
Artyom said to Dietmar. Right now no one in the Reich is sleeping, Dietmar replied. At Chekhov-Wagner Station, Artyom was greeted by a long banner. Welcome, dear guests from Polis. A file of men of various ages, dressed any old way, was lining up at the center of the hall, gawking with red, sleepless eyes and whispering uncertainly to each other. Junior officers, looking like Alsatian dogs, scurried along the ranks, shouting, clapping men on the shoulders and slapping their faces. Tables with placards on them were being set up, and heaps of camouflage gear were being tipped onto them. Trolleys of guns were being trundled up, rumbling and clattering. At the far end of the platform, a tent with a red cross on it was being set up, and glances from the ranks were repeatedly drawn to it as if to a magnet.
But the Red Line will stop at nothing, to deprive the citizens of Teatralnaya Station of their legal right to live a peaceful and happy life.
It was a strange station, round-vaulted like a tunnel, and with archways like gun slots that had been sawn in the walls. Its white armor glittered brightly, and the lamps, old, genuine ones, had been polished too. They seemed odd, not separate from each other, like at the other stations, not simply double or welded together in clusters, but with 20 of them at a time sitting on bronze gondolas in two rows, as if they too had been woken up in the middle of the night and forced to fall into line. And they also looked like the souls of slaves rowing their fleet galleys through an incredible white tunnel to their honestly earned heaven.
Where did you plant the mine?
Dietmar was walking fast, and Artyom could barely keep up with him. The faces in the ranks flashed by, and not one of them had time to take on any shape. Behind him, steel heels clattered on the granite as the guard strode along.
Down below. I went down the escalator, Artyom reported, by the hermetic doors.
Did it bring everything down?
Very thoroughly.
Look here. At present, everything at Teatralnaya is under our control, so I want to believe you. But I'll check, of course. If you did everything correctly, a decoration.
An order.
Dietmar chuckled.
You deserve an order for work like that.
Suddenly, someone rushed out of the line across their path. The guards darted forwards and raised their Kalashnikovs. But it was some small, silly person, harmless, a little beard, steamed-up glasses.
Excuse me, Mr. Officer, Mr. Dietmar, in the name of all that's holy, this is a mistake. I've been mobilized by mistake. I have a wife, Narina. You were just at our home. You came from there.
Dietmar remembered, halted, and waved the guards away.
Ilya Stepanovich, I'm here with an acquaintance of yours. What's the mistake?
To flood the station with freaks. That is what they want. They are enraged by our resistance, and this horde is already at our gates.
My Narina, her contractions have started. After those explosions at the Yatralnaya, they took her into the maternity home. They said the waters could break at any moment, but her time still isn't due yet. Do you understand? Perhaps with proper bed rest she could... We have such a wonderful maternity home, but if they draft me into the army, or something happens there, what will she do now? Who will be with her? And if she gives birth, I have to be there. I must know what the child is, a boy or...
And for this reason, I am declaring general mobilization.
The Unteroffizier smiled at the teacher and put his hand on his shoulder.
As they say, the Tsaritsa was delivered of a fright, neither son, right, Ilya Stepanovich, nor daughter.
Why are you saying that?
Good Lord, it's a joke. I remember our conversation, of course I do. Let's take a walk.
He made a sign to the junior Alsatians and led Ilya Stepanovich away with his arm round his shoulders. Artyom walked alongside, crumpling the envelope in his pocket. What was in it? The envelope was hard. It had something inside it. What did it remind him of? Not a letter, not paper. His head was splitting with the effort. The spring was running down.
You were planning to write a history textbook for us, right?
Dietmar asked the teacher.
Mr. Officer, but if something happens during the birth...
Then sit down and write it. Start now, right away. History is being made before your very eyes.
He stopped, removed Ilya Stepanovich's glasses, breathed on them, wiped them, and set them back in place.
I'll set aside a corner for you in my headquarters. Or else you could get killed, that's true.
To defend a neutral station against the Red Hordes, that is our duty. They have begged us for help, and we are coming.
Thank you. I'm very grateful, Mr. Dietmar, but allow me to see my wife now to support her. She looked terrible. I want her to know that everything is all right, that you intervened. And if the birth...
But what for?
Dietmar asked him.
There's nothing that either you or I can change about that. If a healthy child is born, then good. There are people at the maternity home to congratulate the mother in the name of the party.
But what if... Oh, damn it. What if, God forbid...
And if it's a freak... Quiet now, quiet. Then we have a wonderful maternity home, as you said yourself. General anesthetic. And when she wakes up, it will all have been done. And the little child won't even feel a thing, believe me. They're all professionals there. The same anesthetic, only a different dose. Everything humane. One snip, and it's done.
Of course... Yes, I understand.
Ilya Stepanovich was ashen-faced.
It's just that it happened so soon. Her contractions. She was so anxious, my Narina. I thought there would still be time.
And there still will be time, Ilya Stepanovich.
The Unter tightened his grip on the teacher.
What a good time there will be. So there's absolutely nothing for you to do in the maternity home, that's all. They'll give you paper and a pencil, and I'll be keeping my fingers crossed for you.
He shoved the dumbstruck teacher towards one of the guards.
Allocate this gentleman's space in my office.
No one will stop us when we carry out our sacred duty.
Where are we going? Artyom asked in alarm after they had walked almost all the way through the station. It ended at the steps of a pedestrian passage with sentries on guard.
Well, you need to deliver this dispatch of yours, don't you?
Dietmar looked round at him.
What's in it, by the way? An ultimatum, a plea, a proposal to divide Teatralnaya among the interested parties?
I don't know,
said Artyom.
The order, eh? Fool that I am, I ought to have guessed exactly what you are doing at police, stalker.
We shall always stand up for the rights of non-combatant civilians. We shall take Teatralnaya under our protection. We shall protect it against the hordes of the freaks.
Who is Besolov? You mean you really don't have a clue what it is that you want to deliver to the Führer? That's none of my business. I'm simply carrying out an order.
I like you more and more. I'd even say that you're my ideal.
Dietmar laughed.
Tell a man to blow up a passage, and he blows up a passage. Tell him to deliver an envelope containing God only knows what from God only knows whom, and he does it. Tell him to stick his balls in a press, and he can't refuse to do that either. I wish I had more like you. And we are prepared to pay any price for the right to be called human.
Is Homer alive? Artyom asked Dietmar. What's happened to my old man? Where is he?
He's alive. And waiting for you, Dietmar reassured him.
I want to collect him first.
Predictable. That's why we're going to him now. Another good thing about you, Stalker, is your predictability. It's a real pleasure working with such people.
The sentries ground their heels together, and the commander of the watch threw out his arm, afraid even to look Dietmar in the eye. They started walking up the beveled steps.
Why do you wear those shoulder straps? You're no Unteroffizier, are you? Who are you?
Me? An engineer of human souls.
Dietmar winked at him.
And a bit of a magician.
The passage was used as a barracks. The last time Artyom and Homer had not been allowed in here. There were rows of bunks, orderlies saluted. The Führer glowered down from posters. The standards of the Iron Legion hung down from the ceiling. A grey fist and a black three-fingered swastika. Loudspeakers grew out of the walls like mushrooms trying to outshout each other.
There is no way back, and we shall not retreat, for the sake of your future, for the sake of our future, for the sake of our children's future, for the sake of the future of mankind.
What are you counting on with this little envelope? Dietmar chuckled. The train has already set off. You can't stop it, even if you throw yourself on the tracks. Teatralnaya is going to be ours, and Revolution Square will be too. The Reds won't be able to do a thing. They have their own hunger revolts to suppress as it is. Half the mushrooms rotted because of that dry mold. It's spreading like wildfire.
Who is Besolov?
Artyom repeated, wondering who Miller would accept orders from.
I have no idea.
Then why is a letter from some Besolov more important than a letter from Miller?
It's not a letter from some Besolov that's more important to me, Starker. You're more important.
The barracks came to an end, and there were heaps of fortifications. Hedgehogs, barbed wire, black machine guns with their barrels pointing forward in the direction in which Dietmar was leading Artyom. Guard dogs started barking, mimicking the Führer, and then, mingling with their ragged verse, there came a man's groan. A groan with which the life was probably departing from someone's body. Pushkin Station, Artyom realized. Dietmar was taking him to Pushkin Station.
Is he there? At Pushkin? You promised not to touch him.
They stopped at a brick wall that ran up to the ceiling with an iron door in it. Dietmar dismissed the guard with his index finger. He took out a tobacco pouch, extracted some cut newspaper out of one pocket, sprinkled dried stuff onto the whimsical black letters, licked the paper and rolled it up.
Here, you have a smoke too.
Artyom didn't disdain the offer. His soul had begged for poison back in Miller's office, but Miller had begrudged Artyom one final cigarette before discarding him forever. And now Dietmar had made the offer himself. The Unter leaned against the wall, propped his head back, and looked at the ceiling.
If our teacher's Armenian woman has a freak, what do you think? Will he write our book for us?
If you kill it, the child...
If we put it to sleep, do you think he won't praise us in his little book?
No, he won't.
Artyom replied. He couldn't be such a bastard.
Well, now. Dietmar screwed up his eyes and blew out smoke. But I think he will. I think the Armenian girl will feel bad about it and she'll rail at our Ilya Stepanovich. But then he'll convince her that it's all right and good, that they just have to try again. And he'll sit down to write his book about the Reich, and then we'll publish it in an edition of 10,000 so that everyone in the metro who can read will read it. And the others will learn to read from it, and everyone will know Ilya Stepanovich's name. And for that, Ilya Stepanovich will forgive us for putting his little baby to sleep.
For 10,000 books? He'll surprise you yet?
Artyom smiled crookedly at Dietmar.
He'll flee from the station, maybe even make an assassination attempt. That kind of thing can't be forgiven.
It can't be forgiven, but it can be forgotten. Everyone comes to terms with himself. People rarely surprise me, Stalker. A man is arranged fairly simply. Everyone has the same gear wheels in their head. Here's the desire to live a bit better. Here's the fear, and here's the sense of guilt. And those are all the gear wheels a human being has. Tempt the greedy, wear down the fearless with guilt, intimidate the ones with no conscience. Take you. Why the hell did you show up here again? You knew you were risking your neck. Ah, but you've got a conscience. You're anxious about your old man. You blew up the passage because you've got a conscience. And now there's the hook. I can see it sticking out.
Dietmar touched Artyom's cheek with a finger smelling of cigarette smoke, and Artyom jerked it away.
You swallowed it. And now you're stuck with me, aren't you? After all, you betrayed your order. You cozied up to the enemy. Your friends are there outside waiting for you. They think you're their man. But you're not. You're mine.
Artyom even forgot to smoke. The roll-up went out.
Your tobacco's shit, he told Dietmar.
Ah. But when the Reich is victorious throughout the metro, everyone will have excellent tobacco,
Dietmar promised him.
All right, let's go to see Homer Ivanich.
He winked at the sentry. A bolt 1 meter long with a massively heavy lock on it moved aside, and they were let into Schiller Station. Artyom remembered the station as Pushkin, as white and marble-faced as Chekhov next door, even though it was besmirched with hatred for non-Russians. At Pushkin they had showed him to the crowd and explained why he had been condemned to the scaffold for killing a fascist officer. Artyom had killed the officer quite simply, pointed his automatic at him and squeezed the trigger. It was a spasm of his finger. The spasm cramped his finger when the officer put a bullet through the head of a young boy with Down syndrome. Forgivable. Artyom was young and impressionable. Now he would probably put up with it and turn away. Turn away. He would try to turn away. That tickling in his throat from the noose was far too strong. But now they weren't at Pushkin. This was Schiller. They were nowhere. The entire station had been taken apart and stripped. Not a single slab of marble was left. It had all been torn off and carried away. There was naked, scraped concrete. There were mounds of earth and rivers of mud, antiquated wooden props. Instead of air, there was a fine spray of mist mixed with cement dust, and that made the air concrete too. Searchlights lashed through the vapors, and their beams were visible from beginning to end, like immense clubs. These clubs drubbed at the backs and faces of hideous, naked people. Some concealed their privates with a piece of rag. Others didn't bother. They were all stamped with black, all dripping blood. The ones who were men were overgrown with stubble right up to their eyes. The ones who were women seemed to have no eyes behind their tangled hair, but they were all normal, with two arms and two legs, and only the youngsters were warped and distorted. twisted spines, fingers fused together, flattened heads, some one-eyed cyclops, and some with two heads, and some thick, furred like animals. Freaks. No one was wearing any clothes. There were the naked and the ones in uniforms. The automatic riflemen wore respirators. This was bad for the health otherwise. The respirators looked like muzzles, as if without them the guards might fling themselves on the naked prisoners and gnaw on them with their teeth. But the muzzles meant they had to deal with them differently, with chains and whips of barbed wire. And they filled the air with the roaring that Artyom had heard from behind the wall, from the teacher's toilet. But the most terrifying thing about the station was that there was no end to it. In all directions, these naked beast humans were scrabbling dirt out of it. With pickaxes, spades, hammers and fingernails, desperately scrabbling at the earth and the stone, gnawing out emptiness to the left and the right, upwards and downwards. Schiller Station was already the most cavernous station that Artyom had ever been in, and it was expanding with every minute.
"You use them as slaves?" Artyom asked.
"Why not? More humane than simply liquidating them, isn't it? Let them do something useful. We're expanding our living space. Such a huge flood of volunteers from all over the metro and nowhere to accommodate them,"
Dietmar explained to him, straining to shout over the roaring of the freaks.
"When the reconstruction work is finished, there'll be a garden city here, the largest station in the entire metro, the capital of the Reich, a cinema, a sports hall, a library, and a hospital. So is this where your Führer got his idea about the freaks? So he could have slavery? Not even a quarter of these are freaks. But it's not up to you, Stalker, to decide who's a freak and who isn't. The Führer is a genius. It's stupid to persecute people because they're Armenians or Jews. This has zero effect. If a man was born a Jew, there's nothing that can be done about it. With some, it's even written on their faces. Jew, Chechen, Kazakh, and that's it. He's your target. He's your enemy. And he'll never be loyal to you. But if someone is Russian, does he have immunity now? Is he a chosen one simply by the fact of birth? Is he free to do whatever he likes? Maybe he has nothing at all to be afraid of now. That doesn't make sense. But genetic deformity now? Now that's a horse of an entirely different color. And mutations. Deformity is a tricky business. You're born healthy, and then a tumor starts developing. Or goiter. Or other abnormalities. And perhaps they can't be seen with the naked eye at all. Only a doctor can say for certain. And so every bastard has to tremble in fear and shit himself when he goes to the doctor for a checkup. And the doctor has to tremble in fear too, and decide in consultation with us, the consilium, who is a freak and who isn't. And no one can be certain of anything, ever. And right through his entire life, you understand that? He has to justify his existence and vindicate ours. That's really beautiful, eh? Incredibly beautiful."
He set his hand on Artyom's shoulder. The mole on the bridge of his nose became a third eye, granted to him as a demon, to allow him to see more clearly into the rotten, soft innards of human beings.
"Where is he? Where's Homer?"
Artyom shouted at him.
"Give me the envelope. We had an agreement."
A sudden shower of sparks. Artyom's teeth crunched, and the cave heeled over to one side. Dietmar had swung and smashed the butt of his pistol into Artyom's face, right against the cheekbone. Then he adjusted his grip on the gun and pressed the barrel against Artyom's forehead. A lethal pistol. A Stechkin.
"Do you want me to take it off your body?"
Artyom took a step back, wondering how he could manage to destroy the dispatch. But there were guards waiting behind him. They twisted his arms and threw him down, bending him over with his face to the dirt, and tore the envelope out of his hands. They handed it carefully to Dietmar, who twisted it in his fingers, tried to fold it, and looked at it against the powerful beam of a searchlight.
"Photographs, I think," he said, squatting down beside Artyom. "That's curious. Photographs that stopped a war. That's beautiful, eh?"
He put it in his inside pocket.
"They must be damn good photographs, and the Führer must really like them if no one else is supposed to see them, right? Who could resist the temptation to take just a little peep at something like that? You, for instance, aren't you interested? Where's Homer?
He's here somewhere. Look for him. I don't have any time for that. I have to get to Teatralnaya. Humanitarian aid. Identifying agents. You stay here for a while. Get used to the place. Do a bit of work.
They won't abandon me. Letiaga and the Order. They're waiting for me. You're all done for here. Do you hear me, you scumbag, you lousy bastard? Do you hear me, you dirtbag?
Artyom tried to jump up, but the guards were well-fed and experienced, and they were holding him tight, so he stayed down on all fours with his face in the dirt. Before he got up from his squatting position, Dietmar stroked Artyom on the head.
They're waiting. Yes, they're definitely waiting, aren't they? And now I'll go and tell them whose little man you are.
And he gave Artyom an affectionate slap on the backside. Chapter 13 Living Space. He thought the day would come after he had worked through the night. But here there was neither night nor day, and there was only one shift, from the beginning to the end. They gave them water from a hose, counting the swallows. Saving water wasn't allowed. There weren't any privies. All the tunnels apart from one were completely blocked off with barbed wire, intertwined like cobwebs. It was impossible to run. There was nowhere even to crawl. The beast people crept where they stood, without interrupting their work. Men in front of women and women in front of men. New arrivals learned to do this during their first day. They were taught with barbed wire whips. They were killed without compassion, as a matter of course. The ones who didn't want to work, the ones who were dying anyway and couldn't work, and the ones who tried to be cunning and pretended to be dead already. Workers weren't spared. New ones were brought twice a day. They had to eat too, and the amount of food wasn't increased. Every time the iron door opened and the dumbfounded new arrivals were dragged and shoved into the boundless cave of Schiller Station, Artyom's guts twisted. Now Dietmar would come in. Artyom's deception would be discovered at any moment. The Reds would send soldiers to Teatralnaya from Okhotniriad through the demolished hermetic gates and the upper vestibule. The Blitzkrieg would turn into a war of position, and Dietmar would come back to hang Artyom for treachery. When would he come?
Soon.
They felt Artyom's body, determined that he still had a lot of strength in him, and gave him a barrow to push. He had to collect from the bearded scrabblers everything that they had scraped and broken off, fling it into the barrow, and transport it into an open tunnel, which led to Kuznetsky Most. A flooring of planks had been laid over the sleepers. He could run something like 300 meters along it and then dump the earth and stone on a heap that already rose right up to the ceiling. Artyom had a good job. He realized that immediately. They didn't hobble his feet, and he wasn't made to stand still in one spot. He had to walk round the others, looking to see who had accumulated the most soil and rock. Unfortunately, there was nowhere to run. But on the other hand, he did manage to find Homer. The old man had only spent half a day here, and he was still clothed, but he had already understood what he was allowed to do and what he wasn't. He couldn't slack off or shirk. He couldn't look into anyone's eyes, no matter who he was talking to. But if you spoke to someone without looking at them, that was forgiven. In this factory of bodies and earth, it was impossible to hear anything more than one step away in any case. Homer might be old, but he was bearing up. He wasn't groaning and he wasn't weeping. He struck intently at the ground, not quickly and not slowly, but in no hurry to exhaust his strength. He was soaking wet and smeared with earth. His shoulders were ripped open and stained reddish-brown, and his lips were bitten.
"I came to get you, Nikolai Ivanovich," Artyom said, looking past Homer. "And now we'll probably both end up staying here."
"Thanks. You shouldn't have bothered."
Homer gasped back in time with his blows.
"That two-faced bastard scumbag won't let anyone out."
"We'll get out of here somehow,"
Artyom promised him. Their conversation proceeded scrappily. Artyom couldn't keep going back to the same corner too often. The overseer spotted that sort of thing and lashed people with their whips for it. The whips were springy steel wire with barbs protruding from them in all directions. Some bit into the flesh when they struck, others when they were tugged away.
"How about you? Were you at Theatronium?"
"I was."
"Did you see Umbach?"
"The Reds arrested him. Someone ratted, because he listened to the radio. They took him and shot him in front of me. I didn't get a chance to talk."
"A pity. Really a good man."
He collected Homer's lumps of stone. Then he took a mound of earth from a hunchback at the other end of the station. Then he helped a woman with flabby breasts get up before the overseer could spot her through the stone mist. Then he went back to Homer.
"Umbach wasn't alone. Others had been in touch. People came to Moscow from a different city. From Polar Dawns, probably."
"People? Right. People, you say? Where are they? I didn't meet any."
"The Reds find everyone and waste them. Shoot them. Send them to the Lubyanka, to the KGB. The ones who come, the ones who see them, and the ones who hear about them."
"Maybe they're afraid. They'll help Hansa against them."
Artyom took a new load of stones from Homer. Then he ran over to a young guy who was slow, lopsided, and short of fingers to collect up his scrapings. And then to a skinny Caucasian type who had flung together an entire mountain in his vicious determination not to croak. Through the haze, Artyom thought he saw something familiar, but he didn't have any reason to go closer.
"So do you believe me?" "I told Miller. Miller doesn't believe it. He says it's crazy nonsense."
"I heard Umbach myself. I believe him. I don't understand it, but I believe him."
"Thanks, Grandad. Thank you."
"Or it's spies. Someone's agents.
I don't know."
He cleaned everything up and ran on. Someone waved to him. "Come and take my load." An unexpected joy. It was Leoka, the broker. Exhausted and flogged, but smiling.
"So you've joined us too?"
"You, alive." And Artyom smiled at him sincerely, feeling a little better.
"I'm too valuable an employee to be made redundant,"
the broker croaked.
"So it didn't work out with the Legion?"
"No, it didn't."
Glancing round stealthily, Leoka helped Artyom tip earth into the trolley.
"Probably just not my thing. No getting away from your true calling."
He nodded at the dried-up heaps. An overseer darted over and lashed Artyom and Leoka for talking. Artyom pulled his head down into his shoulders to protect it. He ran into the tunnel, tipped out the barrow, came back and looked round. A guard called him over to the woman that Artyom had lifted up off the floor so that she would live a little bit longer, but she had only held up for a little while and then fallen again. They shone a torch in her eyes, but she still saw nothing but darkness. One guard moved Artyom aside with his automatic rifle. Another took a firm grip on a steel reinforcement bar, took aim, and split the woman's head open, smashing it like an egg. Artyom forgot about the automatic and darted forward, taking the reinforcing bar across his shoulder, the gun butt to his chin, and the kicks from boots when he fell. A damp, iron gun barrel was stuck in his mouth, and its foresight scraped his palate.
"Want to try that again, bastard? Do you? Get up!"
They stood him on his feet and dumped that woman in his barrow.
"Take her."
"Where to?"
They smacked him round the back of his head and sent her off on her final journey. The dead went to the same place as the rocks and soil. The woman was uncomfortable in the barrow. Her legs dangled out and her broken head lolled to one side. "Just hang on for a moment." The first time round they had showed him what to do with cases like this. The dead had to be taken along the planking floor to the mountain of earth blocking off the tunnel to Kuznetsky Most, and then dumped on a mound there, along with the rocks and stones. The mound sometimes slipped down, clothing the naked bodies, filling their mouths and ears with clay and sand. This was their funeral. After that, Artyom didn't try to approach Homer or Leocha. The overseers had spotted him. Instead of Homer, there were various others who were still strong and some who were already exhausted. Kyrgyzis and Russians. Russians and Azerbaijanis. Azerbaijanis and Tajiks. They all gave Artyom their stones, and they all took his strength. Soon, the minute that he took to load the barrow was no longer enough for his legs to rest, and the minute when he ran with the barrow was no longer enough for his arms to recover. He kept looking round when the door creaked. Was it Dietmar? Had he come for Artyom? He stuck it out until he started to fall. Then he went back to his old man. Homer was waiting for him, completely exhausted too.
Why? The Reds. Why doesn't anyone know but them? Maybe they don't let anyone find out. Do you think they're in contact with Dons? Are they keeping it secret? They're lying to Dons, holding talks, eh?
Talks about what?
God only knows what the Reds want.
They've got famine. The mushrooms are rotting. Maybe they want food supplies, eh? If so, the earth there is fertile.
Sure. Pull the other one.
An overseer walked past and whistled. You, and you, and you, and you, eat quickly, it's your turn. They brought a trough of swill and told them to scoop it up with their hands. Artyom couldn't even bear the smell of it, although the others champed and slurped for as long as they could. But at least Homer was fed on this shift, so they had 10 minutes without a pick and a barrow.
I've been up on top. So far I've walked along Tverskaya Street to Teatralnaya, and up there, someone's hunting everyone who walks along Tverskaya Street, with a genuine armored car and a motorbike. They killed 4 of their stalkers, and they were going to finish me. For some reason they didn't touch me, but they found me quickly.
Homer shrugged. Then he folded his fingers into a cup, scooped up some gruel, sniffed it, and thought.
And then I walked back, and there was no one there. I got to police, without a suit, not dressed. And you know what? I got caught in the rain.
In the rain?
The old man asked, looking up.
In the rain?
Artyom chuckled. On all sides, people jostled and pushed their way through to the trough like swine. Artyom didn't see it. Instead, he saw tall, slim people in wide-brimmed hats. He saw rain falling from a cloudless sky and those slow-flying machines again.
What an idiot, he said to himself. Just imagine it, walking along in the rain, and imagining something like that, like an airship or something, only with transparent wings, like flies have, only big ones, like dragonflies, and all in such bright, festive colors. And the rain as well. I dreamed it.
He lowered his voice in embarrassment. The beast people were eating. He mustn't distract them with nonsense like this. But the beast people couldn't give a shit for Artyom's dreams. Their trough was getting shallower, and they still had to live here for some time yet, and without the slops there was absolutely no way they could possibly do that. But Homer was listening. Listening and not eating.
"'Bought those carriages. The little ones.'
He coughed to clear his throat.
"'Instead of cars. On the roads.'
"'Yes,'
Artyom confirmed, perplexed. "'With 4 places.'
"'Did you see them? Did you see that? Up there, on the surface?'
"'I saw it. As if I was remembering a dream, you know. But you, how do you know?'
"'That's out of my book. Out of the notebook.' It's written in the notebook.
Homer screwed his eyes up, examining Artyom and blinking, trying to understand if this was some kind of mockery.
Did you take it, my notebook, and read it? When?
I didn't take it. And where is it anyway?
They confiscated it. Immediately. That Dietmar, my documents, the notebook, everything... But what do you mean you didn't read it? How else could you know?
I told you it was a dream.
It's not your dream, Artyom. It isn't even a dream.
What?
I told you about that girl. About Sasha. The one from Tula. She was drowned at the flooded station.
Something. Yes, I remember something when we got addled at Svetnoy Boulevard.
Yes. That's Sasha. It's hers. That's the way she pictured the world up on the surface. She was born in the metro. She'd never been up on top. So that was her stupid, her own naive way.
Sasha? With white hair, you said?
Artyom's head started spinning, and the world swayed as if it was caught in a wave of hot air. He rubbed his temples. His head was splitting.
Eat? Why aren't you eating?
A man with a swollen belly told him wearily as he dropped back from the trough. His beard was matted, and there was dark water streaming down it.
Enough of that idle chatter. They only feed us once a day.
He strained and gave a long, drawn-out fart. Then he lay down on his back and started staring up at the ceiling. He'd done what he could to save Artyom, but Artyom couldn't even glance into that trough today. He felt sick immediately.
With white hair? She's about 18. How do you know? How do you know?
Homer stood up, too, with his hands on his waist.
I don't understand. I don't remember how, where from. But I saw all of it myself. I can't picture it to myself. With my own eyes.
Artyom raised his hand as if he wanted to catch a toy plane flying past him.
You took it. My notebook. You took it.
The old man said angrily, absolutely convinced.
It couldn't be anything else. Why are you lying to me now? I didn't take your fucking notebook,
Artyom yelled furiously.
What the hell would I want with you and your damn chronicles? You're making fun of me, right, you asshole?
Artyom grabbed hold of his barrow without even waiting for the whistle. Afterwards he regretted it, while there was still time to regret it. But then routine took over. Things grew together. Load, run, unload, stone, earth, a dead body, one thing on top of another, one thing underneath another. His arms and legs first caught fire, and then fell silent, then turned weak and came to a halt. Then more life appeared in them from somewhere deep down on the bottom, and now through the dull aching pain they jerked, lifted, lowered, walked, and dragged the time along. He started falling asleep as he moved. He hadn't slept for 24 hours, and they roused him with steel thorns. He tried to help those who fell, and they drove him away with chains. He stopped turning round and reacting when the door rumbled. He had already forgotten about Dietmar. He didn't want to know about him. He didn't want to hear the whining, miserable beast people, to hear their stories about how they had ended up in here, who was punished for what kind of deformity. Some of them only mumbled anyway. Not to Artyom, but to everybody there, so that everybody there would know a little bit about them, and remember them when they died here and were covered over by the advancing bank of earth. And he had no more wits left to construct lines and chains from the shot radio operator to the KGB man Spinolub, from the loose-mouthed Zuev to the Lubyanka, from Miller to some Besselhoff or other, from Besselhoff to the Führer, from the Führer to Dietmar. None of this came together. None of it made any kind of meaning. Instead of connections drawn in by an invisible pencil, instead of a dusty slaughterhouse, instead of troughs filled with slops, Artyom summoned the slow-moving planes into the concrete air and built houses reaching up to the sky in the cave. Those planes allowed him to wait for the lights-out signal. They evacuated him into the world that the drowned girl had imagined for herself. But no. He had seen it all for himself, definitely, with his own eyes. But when? How? The signal for lights out came after all. They were prodded into the corner and heaped up onto each other. Artyom fell asleep, expecting to see that city. Sasha's city. But he saw cells. Svinolub, arisen from his ashes, and himself fleeing. Only in the dream he didn't run along a straight corridor to freedom, but through an enchanted maze that had no exit. And after that the dream ended and the whistle of the new shift sounded. It was still day, or was it night? 24 hours during which Artyom had learned to slurp the swill together with everyone without getting sick, during which he hadn't gone over first to the old man when he was hurt, during which he had stopped counting the barrows of earth and the barrows with dead bodies. His clothes were all ripped and tattered by barbed wire. The scratches from the thorns constantly oozed a red liquid, and the liquid kept getting more and more transparent, more and more futile and useless. The group A rhesus negative flowed out like diluted compote. There was no one to compensate for it, to fill Artyom up with fluid of his own. Lechyaga had obviously gone on standing there, catching those spots of light on his hands, until he turned away and went tramping back. He couldn't do anything without orders, and there could only be one order about Artyom from Miller. Scratch him off the list. And Dietmar hadn't come for him, hadn't taken him off to be hanged. He was busy at the front. Artyom had neither rescue nor execution coming to him. Then he ran through another day and night. He took away Homer's stones without speaking, and Homer let him have them without speaking. Nikolai Ivanovich looked bad. He had turned yellow and was swaying on his feet. Artyom would have felt sorry for him, but the old man wouldn't allow it. He was offended about the Chronicle and because Artyom had given him hope. He forced himself to talk with the exhausted Leocha. How were they building this vast hall? Who was directing the workers? Who told them to take the tunnel liners apart? Leocha pointed to a slant-eyed individual. That's Farouk. He built Moscow City. He has his own people, Abdurrahim and Ali, and they've been trusted with the job. They couldn't find any other specialists. Farouk strode around everywhere with his assistants, and with no shackles, full of himself. But he too scooped the swill out of the common trough with his own hands. He guided the construction work confidently, deciding who should dig, who should mix cement, who should put up props.
"We've got to escape," Artyom told the broker. "Otherwise we'll croak." "Croaking is the surest way to escape from here," the broker said with a feeble smile. "Well, you go first then," Artyom laughed with half his face. "To scout out the way."
On the fourth day, Dietmar still didn't come. And Lechyaga didn't come either. And Artyom had no strength left even to think about escaping. But he definitely wanted to keep on living for a while, and the desire became more desperate with every hour. Not in order to get his business done, take revenge, find out the truth, and see his nearest and dearest, but simply to live for a little while. For this, Artyom learned not to acquire fresh wounds from the barbed wire. The repulsive taste of the swill made him feel sick to the stomach, but he forced himself to keep going back to the trough in order to draw at least a little bit of strength from it. He learned how to work so that he didn't see anything around him apart from the dragonfly airplanes. But his blindness came at a price. When people lying beside you have their heads broken open and you say nothing, then what is left unsaid accumulates, turns sour, and rots. When they lashed him with the metal thorns, the purulence in his soul flowed out together with the pain and the blood. But when his wounds began drying up and growing over with scabs, Artyom started fermenting on the inside. "Lights out" sounded, but he couldn't get to sleep. He tossed and turned, scratching at his scabs, opening them up. Scabs. And the sleeplessness, and the sweltering heat, and the excessive corporeal closeness with other people, like being in a ditch with dead bodies, set him drifting. Who was it that had spoken to him about scabs? Who had wanted to wash those scabs off him, eh? His head was lying on some woman's knees. See how this person is overgrown with some kind of scabs, isn't he? Better be gentle with him, baby. Everything was blurred, as if he was looking through dirty polythene. But no, it wasn't a dream, it was true. His head really was lying on her knees. The girl's knees. He looked up into her eyes, and she looked down at him, leaning over. From below, her breasts looked like white little half-moons. She was naked, and Artyom was naked. He turned his head and kissed her on her soft, hollow stomach. There were crimson marks there, like dots. Cigarette burns. Old ones. The traces of lazy torture. He kissed her on that burn. That spot was more tender. More vulnerable. Thank you, Sasha. She touched his hair with her fingers and moved her hand, stroking. And the hair was soft. But as soon as her fingers moved on, it straightened up stubbornly. Her smile was abstracted. Everything was drifting. Close your eyes. Do you know how I used to imagine the world up on the surface? On the next shift, Artyom kept looking round to see when Homer would finally accumulate enough stone. He couldn't wait to tell him, to share this with him, bring him this joy, and to justify himself. But the old man worked very slowly, as if he was in no hurry at all. He had become scraggy, and his skin hung loose on him. The gaze of his eyes wandered. Homer struck at the wall sparingly. The pieces that broke off it were small, and mostly he just left scratches on it. And then before he'd gathered enough stone, he suddenly sat down on the ground. He leaned back against the wall, stretched out his legs and closed his eyes. Artyom noticed first, before the overseers, and he tossed a stone at Leocha. Distract them. He loaded the dried-out old man in his barrow and trundled him off towards the tunnel, as if to bury him, but dumped him with the sleepers. Then he took a dose of the whip for walking along with an empty barrow, but not for the old man. Artyom asked God not to write the old man off yet. He had asked for a lot this last week. How could he pay everything back? But this time he was allowed to extend his credit. Homer didn't die. He woke up at the whistle along with the other shift. Artyom managed to meet him at the trough. He was impatient to talk to him.
Listen, Grandad, I've remembered where those planes got into my head. The old man was still stunned. That time on Svetnoy Boulevard, when you got me drunk, I think I saw her, right there in front of my eyes, you know, it's kind of vague, only you won't be angry with me, will you?
You saw her?
I saw her, there, at Svetnoy. It was her who told me everything. Your notebook had nothing to do with it, honestly.
She was at Svetnoy? How? What was she?
A girl, with white hair, frail. Sasha. Sashenka.
You're not lying now, are you?
The old man's voice had turned weak. He wanted to believe Artyom. He was trying.
I'm not lying. I'm not mocking you, Artyom replied firmly.
Alive. But you ate that garbage there. It gives you all sorts of...
I saw her. I talked to her. I remember it. I just remembered.
Wait, Sasha. My Sasha in that hellhole, in a whorehouse. What was she doing? Did you see how... What was she doing?
Nothing, Grandad. She was just fine. A week ago she was alive.
But how could she... How did she get out? How is she...
I got them from her. Those pictures, the planes and the rain. She said, close your eyes and imagine.
But in a whorehouse. Why was she in a whorehouse?
Calm down. Calm down, Grandad. You mustn't get so... upset. She's in a whorehouse, but just look where the two of us are. See? Perhaps a whorehouse isn't the worst place to be.
We have to get her out. We've got to get her out of that place.
We'll do that, Grandad. We'll definitely get her out, if only someone gets us out. Sit down, sit down. What have you jumped up for?
Sasha had given Homer strength, and hope had deceived his body. But the deception didn't last for long. The old man waved his pick feebly, and he wasn't the one controlling his tool now. It was controlling Homer, setting him swaying. He and Artyom never had anywhere to escape to from the station anyway, but now it was just impossible. Asking the guards to spare Homer would have been to condemn him to immediate death. There was only one thing delaying the execution. The arrival of new workers had been disrupted, and the overseers had become more condescending to the old ones. And so Homer held out for another day. Then they came for him.
Nikolaev!
Someone shouted through a megaphone from the door.
Nikolai Nikolaev!
Homer pulled his head down into his shoulders and started striking more rapidly with the pick in order to grind out his norm before he was shot. Artyom crept towards the door with his barrow to scout things out. Standing there in the doorway, backed up by men with automatic rifles and gazing round with an air of fright and revulsion, was the teacher, Ilya Stepanovich, looking a bit puffy-faced but unhurt and in uniform. He raised the megaphone to his beard and called again.
Nikolaev! Homer!
Then the guard remembered, took a closer look, and dragged the old man over to Ilya Stepanovich. The teacher walked down one step and then a second. He mumbled something into the old man's dirty ear, wincing at the stink. Homer didn't look at him, but down at the floor. Artyom received a lash of the whip for his pensive pause and curiosity and had to move on. Ilya Stepanovich stood there for a while, then gestured despairingly at Nikolai Nikolaev with his clean hand and left.
"What did he want?"
Artyom asked the old man, seizing his moment at the trough.
"He wanted to take me out. He sat down to write his book, but it won't come. They gave him everything he needs. A separate study. Special rations. But no. He says he's read my notebook, and he wants me to help him. Give him pointers. He'll get me out of here for good."
"Go on. Agree."
"Agree to what? To write his book?
What difference does that make to you? You'll croak in here."
"Write him a book about the glory of the Reich in my own words."
"This way there won't be any kind of book. You'll be gone and there'll be nothing left after you."
Homer sucked in his gruel and swallowed. The taste was all right, more or less like life.
"I told him I won't go without you."
"Yes, you will, Grandad. Go."
"He can't do that. He only got permission for one man to help. He says they won't let him have two."
"But what about Dietmar?"
"Dietmar's been killed. At Teatralnaya. The Reds broke through somehow and killed him. And lots of others, too. That very day. Now the teacher works directly for the Führer. He liked the little idea of a book."
"Dietmar's been killed." Artyom was suddenly suspended in the void of a tunnel. Now there was no one here who knew him or remembered him. He wasn't a hostage, a prisoner, or a double agent any longer. He was a nameless